There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this beautiful Monday, Cinco de Mayo Monday, and a lot to do on today's show. How do you get in touch? Pretty easy. The most popular way, the Mallory Piping text line at 343-0106. Same phone number for a phone call, 343-0106. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you leave us one of those talk back messages as well. As we get started, I want to do this because our next guest is going to come on here, and maybe he can comment on this as well. The Alcatraz thing they just reported on, on the national news there. So this is what Trump does. He does, like, and I've been in the radio business for 34 years now, something like that. I've been doing radio shows, got crazy zany morning shows to matriculate to where I've been here at FM Talk 106.5. But kicker stories, we call them. Like in music we just had, they were like all kicker stories. But in regular talk radio, you've listened to me over the years, there'll be the main part of the show that we're doing, but there's often some, wacky story, like over the weekend, the world's the biggest dog and the world's smallest dog met for a play date. And listen, over the years, that's where the attention falls. That's what drives phones, as my old program director used to say. Well, Trump does that as well. He's working on, you get the main part of what he works on. And then he throws something into the mix each week. It's like the tennis ball across the yard and the dogs all chase it, right? I think that's what he does here. I mean, the Alcatraz thing, I would have thought it'd been more Trump-esque if he would have said, "I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to make Alcatraz the new Brunswick of the Pacific," or something like that. Look at that real estate; it's fantastic. It's got San Francisco here. You got, but it's what gets all the attention. Am I right? Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News joins us now. Am I right? Is that? I mean, it's like each week there's a new. I'm going to take the army and get Greenland. He's not going to do that, but it's what gets all the attention.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's enough. I mean, I actually do think he's somewhat serious about Greenland, and that's actually that policy idea has been around for a while. Mm-hmm. The idea of,
but him saying, "I'm not going to say no. I wouldn't use the military." Of course, he's not going to use the military.
Well, using the military is kind of crazy. Yeah, but this is the same thing. I didn't even see it until this morning when, we don't run a ton of wire stories, but this is just too good, right? Like somebody said on Twitter last night, like, "Oh, he must have watched The Rock over the weekend," yes. and now he wants to reopen Alcatraz. I mean, of course, the amount of investment it would take to actually repair that place. I mean, it's a ruin practically. But it's not practical. But yeah, you say Alcatraz, and you get the picture. I mean, you see the picture that we ran. It's, yep. I mean, it's cool and makes me want to go see The Rock, or often forgotten Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood,
which is my fave. That's mine. I don't think I've seen The
really
Rock,
good one.
But Escape from Alcatraz, I did see. Or like more Trump-esque would be him saying, "Look at this real estate we got," because I think the National Park Service owns it now, right? And say like, "We own it. We're going to sell it."
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
it's going to be fantastic views. You could people from San Francisco are going to have their houses out there. It's going to be huge.
Well, yeah, see, that's part of the movie The Rock, is that the national parks, they give tours, right? And mm-hmm. so they take these kind of domestic terrorists, if you will. Well, they take over and lock all the tourists up in Alcatraz, and they got to go rescue them. So, like, you got to go watch that. I'm sure that's had something to do with it. But yeah, you're right. This is one of those things, red herring. You throw it up. Got to keep the news cycle churning. Otherwise, we get too focused on, you know, tariffs and stock prices and things like that.
And on the tariffs thing, I was going to do this coming up next hour, but I think he's got some wins to talk about there as well as China. You know, last week that story came out, the white list that they put out. China's like, well, we have these reciprocal tariffs almost unless we need the stuff. And we almost have like an essential workers list for products, what China really, really wants from us.
Yeah, so there have been some positive developments. I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many people that weren't ready to do some retaliatory, whether it's tariffs or anything else, sanctions on China. It is clear that China has been not just unfair, but adversarial towards us in terms of trade. And so I think those type of things, which a lot of them were already in place, in the first Trump administration, they were so popular that Biden didn't even do anything about them.
Right.
Some of the tariffs on China. So I think, you know, when it comes to China and some a handful of other nations, I think you can say that. I think it's the broad brush and just, you know, not really understanding the overall strategy, being confused. The worst thing for, you know, business is uncertainty. And that's what's causing stock panic is uncertainty. Are these things going to be around? I think most of us hope and hopefully understand that there won't always be these crazy tariffs on all countries, essentially, that they'll come off and as trade deals get done. But until that actually happens, there is a lot of uncertainty. And so it's nice to see some positive developments, but there's a lot of, like I said, uncertainty in the business market right now, not understanding where their investments need to go.
For sure. Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. And speaking of Capital Journal, so you and I had the same guest over the last week, and I saw the sparkle in Speaker Pro Tem Pringle's eyes when he started talking about the sine die and the end of session. It's real close. It's real close here. The horse can see the barn.
He's not alone. We've all got the...
You got fever.
We've
got
all
the
got
fever.
That look in our eye with the... Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so...
And we are. We're here at the last 3 days. That will be tomorrow, Tuesday, and then Wednesday. And then they'll take a week off and come back on the following Wednesday, and that'll be the day 30. That'll be sine die. And they're doing that for a couple of reasons. Number one, they just need more time. The Senate has gone so slow and really bottlenecked all the legislation that they just need physically more time to get, you know, local bills and things like that done. And it gives them an opportunity to overturn any potential vetoes. And there's not any sense that the governor is going to veto any serious bill, but what will happen is, like, the second to last day of session, that's when the floodgates will probably release, like, hundreds of local bills that have been just waiting to pass. And so the governor has nothing to do with these local bills. She may not have time to sign them all, or may just not want to sign them all, right? Like, what does she care about? Not care, but she's never known anything about this local bill from North Alabama, and she may not or may not agree with it. So what it gives them is an opportunity for that to be pocket vetoed. It's not adversarial. It's not her being against anything. It's just, well, look, y'all have time to pass it again anyway, so y'all just override me. So it's a combination of both. And so they'll have that opportunity when they come back that following Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll do a little remedial Alabama politics. Or open our No Alabama textbooks for this from back in the day. People old enough to have used that textbook like me. The governor's seeing these local bills, the floodgates open because, and I have to tell people this all the time, that there's a lot of stuff that we talk about at county level goes through Montgomery.
Yeah, it goes back to the old home rule debate. There's so much, there's so little that local municipalities, whether it's a county or city, can do without some kind of help from the legislature. I mean, roads, bridges, all just, I can't even tell you all the different kind of regulations that one way or another have to end up even if the county commission passes something, they still got to go to the legislature a lot of times. And so these local bills will add up. And that's the thing. They're local. They're not controversial. That means the local delegation has all agreed that, yes, this is okay. So they're not controversial, but they got to get through the process anyway. And so they're just like any other bill. And when the Senate is just this big bottleneck, those are sitting there waiting too. And so they've got to get not just to the statewide stuff, including some really important bills, immigration, crime, things like that. They've got to get to these local bills. And so, yeah, those last 2 days, I would say Tuesday and Wednesday this week, are going to be pretty late nights in the legislature, especially in the Senate, as they catch up to some of these. But that the House too, though, because a lot of these bills have to come back to the House. That's why there's so much frustration right now, especially in the House, because they feel like they've been diligent and just trying to go about this work, and the Senate, you know, is stuck mainly because of the Democrats, the Senator Smitherman mainly bottling everything up. And so it's just they can deal with that some, you know, by cloturing, by cutting off debate. They can't deal with all of it. You can still slow down the process without even filibustering. And so that's what they're dealing with upstairs in the Senate. And a lot of senators are frustrated too. I've heard plenty of frustration from them, more so than really in years past.
Yeah, Todd, speaking of this too, that it was Alexander Willis on your website had the story up about half of the governor's safe Alabama package. The 8-point collection of public safety bills and funding requests to improve public safety have been signed into law. The remaining bills are expected to be taken up in the final days of this session. I mean, this is what she rolled out on, right? This was what she talked about. This was her big, it was the veterans and then public safety, right? This was her big priority.
Absolutely. And it was everybody's top priority, improving public safety. This comes in the wake of so many shootings last year. You know, they just kind of got out of control. And so some of the bills have passed in terms of improving public safety, you know, help for cops recruitment, stuff like that. The big one is the police, what's called the police immunity bill. And it's really the Back the Blue Act. This gives police officers limited immunity from prosecution and from civil suits when their actions on the job, meaning, you know, firing their firearm, is deemed constitutional. That's meant to help recruit cops, help support cops. We obviously have a shortage of police officers in our large cities, and so that's what it's meant to do. But the reason why it hasn't passed is Democrats have a real problem with it. And it took 2 days in the Senate Judiciary Committee to finally get it through. And it was Smitherman who was really ramping up some pretty harsh language about the bill. I think it'll ultimately pass, but again, it's probably going to have to take cutting off debate, probably take a cloture motion to actually get it passed, just because Democrats aren't having it on that one. I think some of the other ones are less controversial. You think about the Metro Crime Suppression Units. I think that's pretty widespread support. But yeah, they're going to go to the wall on stopping the police immunity bill.
Well, and you know, looking at it, I mean, I wanted to make sure when it first came up, I said, I don't want to step on people's civil liberties. You know, I'm for public safety 100%. I just want to make sure. And I looked at it; it didn't seem to be that way. But yeah, you hear Senator Smitherman talk about it. It seems like everything is horrible about it.
I mean, really harsh language. He said, "This is a green light for cops to kill black people." I mean, that's what he said. And I applaud Representative Reynolds for standing there and not, you know, losing his cool. Because if somebody accused me of that for my legislation, I would highly take offense to that. But that's ramping up the rhetoric to try to create an environment where Republicans would, you know, I guess be afraid to pass it or something. I don't think I don't sense that at all. This legislation has been amended. Democrats have been involved the entire time. They're not getting everything they want, but they have been involved in the process. And I think at the end of the day, it will pass. And, you know, probably get no votes from Democrats, but they they can criticize the bill, but they can't say they weren't involved and they didn't, you know, and that the majority didn't listen to those concerns and include some of their, you know, changes.
All right, to wrap up this discussion about the session with a question for the text line, the Mallory Piping text line. Buddy asks here, and I actually talked about this with Speaker Pro Tem Pringle the other day, but he said, can you ask Todd about the RTD alcohol bill? The House passed it, sent it on to the Senate. What's going on with it there? Do you know?
Well, that's one of them that I'm looking at in these final days. There's two kind of similar. One is the hemp bill, which is THC drinks and other we're kind of regulating those, which that would get those into ABC stores. And the second one is the RTD, yeah, ready to drink. These are like the High Noons. I think there are some other varieties that it's actual vodka in the drink, not
because we get like a wine stuff, right? I mean, here in Alabama, those things are made with some kind of malted wine or something like that.
Well, in the grocery store,
yeah,
but you can go to the ABC
the liquor
store,
well,
the liquor
course.
Store,
yeah,
but, and get the liquor based drink that are just better, honestly. And so, the bill would allow those drinks, the liquor based drinks, to be sold in grocery stores as well and convenience stores. But obviously that's controversial. Anytime alcohol is involved, it's controversial. But there's been so much work done on this bill over the last, I'd say, 2 or 3 years. I do see it getting across the finish line in the Senate. And it's also just a consumer bill, you know. What's the difference, in terms of alcohol? I mean, it is a change in terms, selling liquor at a grocery store is a difference. But it's, what's the difference between a White Claw and a High Noon practically? And so
5 or 6 bucks.
So I do think they'll, well, and see, yeah, and that's the consumer makes the choice. So I do think it's going to get through though.
Okay. There you go, buddy. Tell folks, number one, I know the horse can see the barn. Capital Journal going to go back to your normal once a week, coming soon, but you got the end of session here. So how do they check out the show if they missed it over the last week or weekend?
Easiest way to do that's YouTube. We have everything on our YouTube channel. It's a good way to catch up on past episodes, interviews like Mr. Pringle's. Just go to YouTube/Capital Journal or just, on YouTube, search for Capital Journal. That's probably the easiest way. And then subscribe. If you subscribe, then you'll never miss an episode. Every time we publish, you can just get it
ding.
Actually before it airs that night.
Yeah, I know. Ding on my phone. There's Todd.
There you go.
And then Alabama Daily News, they want to get that email. How do they do it?
It's really easy. And now, man, you got to be subscribed now because the news is coming in fast. The end of session. It's just aldailynews.com. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list.
Good stuff, Todd. Appreciate it, man. We'll be talking next week.
All right, Sean. Be good.
All right. There goes Todd Stacy. We're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1227 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Monday, Cinco de Mayo style. It's like you don't hear a cultural appropriation when it comes to Cinco de Mayo. You don't hear it for St. Patrick's Day because there's money to be made. Just go out and celebrate. Yeah, everybody, get out and enjoy it. All right. Coming up in just a few minutes, John Sharp from AL.com. He and I got a lot to talk about, but one of the stories, John and I have been doing this so long, we laugh at whether it be a bridge and Bayway story, for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway project. I mean, he and I were at a documentary about this, and that documentary, I don't know, is 5 years old now, or four, something like that, maybe. And then one of the perennials is the discussion of Amtrak, and he's got an update on that, so we'll get to that. And then some stories that are, I guess, newer out there in the mix. All right, to the Mallory Piping text line here. Let's see. Okay, from earlier conversation, Anderson from Foley said he, I imagine he means Trump, loves a lid, live in the heads of the dumb masses. He lives, I mean, he he has a kicker story. I look at it from a broadcaster perspective. He has like the main thing he's working on. Then he's like, hey, you know what? This week I'm going to say something else crazy. And then everybody will chase that. B-Dark says, don't need nothing China got. Every time you buy Chinese goods, you're supporting communism. It's from B-Dark. Which, by the way, B-Dark, I was interested too. I, like you, a listener of Bill Finch's show. And I like the fact that I love when people show their, you know, the depths of their personality. And B-Dark often is, on this show, texting in, you know, he's upset about this or that, or talking about state, local, national politics. And then during Bill Finch's show, I find out the guy is like growing roses. So cool. Very, very cool. Jason says Dauphin Island should have been our Alcatraz. We missed a huge opportunity. Negative, Jason. Get that words out of your mouth. Negative. And Grant says, I feel sorry for anyone stuck inside today. The weather is awesome. Oh, it is fantastic. It is. It's one of the days I wish we had a convertible studio here. We'd drop the top and do the rest of the show that way.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous outside. I can see it through the windows, through the fluorescent light above me. I'll tell you what, eventually, I'll have really arrived in this business when I get a radio studio where you press a button and it, you know, you can have class outside. We can have like a top go back and we can have the sunshine and air. In here, it'd be real nice. All right, let's check in with my buddy John Sharp with AL.com and pickleball tournament fame joining us now. Thanks for your time, John.
Oh, Sean, how's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. When you get ready to see his name in lights as sometime soon,
right.
In the pickleball.
No.
I'm ready for it,
fake
man.
News.
that's what I'm in the business of. You know, I was telling folks earlier that, like, in our conversations on air and our conversations off air, it's funny that we have certain stories that you and I talk about over and over again. I mean, heck, we were in a documentary about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, you know? And that was, how long ago was that? The documentary? Right. I mean, it's like a long time ago. So there's stories that keep coming up. One of them is not the bridge, but is the bridge, but the other one is Amtrak, and you have been on this since the jump reporting about it. So I read your stuff and I check it out, and I said, okay, what does this mean? Alabama officials unconcerned over Amtrak funding arrangement as the project moves forward to a July start. I'm concerned with the whole thing. This has been so many fits and starts for this thing. I don't know. I'm just generally concerned if I see Amtrak in a headline, man.
Yeah, what we call our greatest hit, Sean, the Ariel Speedwagons.
Right, that's what everybody comes to hear. Yes.
Amtrak is one of those greatest hit stories, and because it has been out there for, 10 years and going now. But we are coming to the final lap of this one, I think. But basically, there's always going to be issues about this project that are going to last beyond the train coming back. The train is set to come back. I think they're about ready to pinpoint the exact date, and I think we'll know here in the month of May. I'm expecting that announcement this month. So that's how soon this could be, when we know an exact date and then the official fares. I know there's been a range of prices put out there, but until we know officially what that amount is, we can't say definitively how much it's going to cost to take the train from Mobile to New Orleans and back. So we still don't know yet. But we should know these details this month. That's from my understanding, from the latest I've been told in regards to this project. And that a start date, which we assumed was going to be in June, later in June, has now been pushed to mid-July.
Okay, wait. You're not told. It was first we were told, out of some date in the past, then we were told we'd be riding it to go to the Super Bowl in New Orleans. Remember that one?
Yeah, that was back in last August. I think that was a date, that was an optimistic date that was thrown out there. Of course, Amtrak did not put that date out there, but there were other officials that had been part of this project that did throw out that date as far as, hoping optimistically that we'd see it around the Super Bowl. Amtrak was kind of loosely saying spring. Well, you know, that's not going to happen now. But we're looking at now midsummer, after the 4th of July, probably mid-July to early August is what we're looking at. Oh. Now, the big concern here that I've raised, although I don't know if it's a concern because there is a lot of emotion still with this train. There was during the inspection train trip back in 2016 in the coastal Mississippi communities. There was a huge turnout when the train went through these communities. It still to this day made an impression on me. It really did.
There's just not much going on over there, you know? I mean, it's just...
Stop. But at any rate, so we're going to have this potential for this train. It could roll at the 20th anniversary of Katrina. That's still out there, and then the 20th anniversary being late August.
And if people don't know the significance of Katrina's what undid the line.
Right, undid the line, but, you know, just kind of the symbolism there would be an emotional moment again, I'm sure. But, from my understanding right now, they're looking at hoping to do this before that. And so I think we're starting to tighten this timeline down a little bit, though. You know, we're talking the month of May. We're saying, you know, we're going to know more about the date certain in this month, and the fare will be known this month. We already know the name of the train, the Mardi Gras service, so at least that's been put out there. So we're tightening this. I think we're coming to a completion. There's obviously some construction going on down there at Cooper's Riverside Park. I've taken pictures of some other news outlets. So there's physical work going on.
Yeah, people ask me that a lot, John. Let me stop for a second. What is the station going to look like? Because, I mean, we've had renderings that were like, you and I just get out and frame it up with 4x4s and some, you know, pieces of half-inch plywood to other, like, what is it going to look like?
Yeah, so it'll be pretty simplistic looking. I mean, it's going to be a train stop. I mean, there will be an awning, I'm sure, to avoid, kind of like a bus stop where you're not in the weather directly. But, yeah, it's not going to be anything awe-inspiring. It certainly is not a train station per se. That is something that Mayor Stimson has indicated that the city, of course the mayor will not be in office by then, but it's something that the city and the city council consider going forward, whether or not they want to do a train station. I think the objective is this is a three-year pilot project. I mean, we'll see 3 years of how this train runs, you know, as far as the interest in it, the revenue that's generated from it, whether or not the states are willing to invest in it going forward, on whether or not the city of Mobile decides, hey, you know, maybe we ought to do a little bit more down here at Cooper Riverside Park to support the train. That would require the city to build a building of some sort.
And right now, other states being Mississippi and Louisiana, those states have contributed. As a state, we have not. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And that was the basis of the story. Fox 10 ran a story about a week or so ago talking about how, you know, the Alabama budget did not have any money set aside for supporting the three years of operations of the Mardi Gras service. But talking to the folks involved in this project, they say that, but well, you know, this is spread out over 3 years. It's about a $3 million investment spread out over 3 years. The Port Authority is dedicated, or at least vowed, to spend $1 million. Governor Ivey's office has, at least verbally, said that they're interested in supporting the project as well by about $1 million. So the city of Mobile would be on the hook, theoretically, for maybe $1 million or slightly more than $1 million if the other two entities go ahead, the Port Authority and the state, say that they support, you know, they will go ahead and make that financial commitment as well.
But this is on top of the $3 million. This is on top of the $3 million the city's already pledged.
No, it's $3 million total.
Okay.
So the city would be.
So it would not be.
Okay. The city has pledged the $3 million, but to offset the city's obligation, the state and the port would come in with their $1 million of support. So that's how it would work. And the problem is there's in this year's budget, there's no $1 million or any money set aside for Amtrak. And when you talk to officials that I've talked to about this, you know, we're really getting in the weeds here, but they're saying, well, you know, we weren't expecting that this year. I talked to Knox Ross over the Southern Rail Commission. He said, we didn't even lobby for anybody this year. we really want to get the train going, and then we'll come back and then ask for an appropriation, because right now we don't have a train running. How do you go to the state officials and say support the operations of this train? There's no train running. That's the argument he's making. Now, of course, the state of Louisiana and Mississippi have already made their made their promises in regards to the operations of this. And with Alabama, it's a less amount. The state of Alabama will be much less than Louisiana, Mississippi will be spending, because no city in Mississippi and no city in Louisiana, the city of New Orleans, for instance, is not spending any money to support the operations of the Mardi Gras service. Only Mobile has made that dedication, and actually they're going to support it with $3 million of appropriation over 3 years, with the hopes and the expectations that the port and the state will come in with their $1 million of support.
Right. If you're just joining us, talking to John Sharp with AL.com, you can read this story and a whole lot more over there. Just search for him at AL.com. You talk about the fair part of it, too, that it hasn't been announced. And that was a thing. And for people to understand, like, romantically, I like the idea of a train. But as a fiscal hawk, I've worried for a decade about this story. And the fair is going to, I mean, I think, wasn't it one of the press conferences or something you had reported on? This has been a while ago. That even at X fair or whatever, it would lose money. Wasn't it something like that? Amtrak wasn't even saying it would break even.
Yeah, this has been a while ago. There's some good, there's that range that they give in which how much they can expect revenues to go up versus projected ridership. But again, these are numbers that haven't been. We haven't dissected this in a while. Without a fair price, it's hard to say the obvious question would be, once that fare's locked in, then what's your anticipated ridership in order to break even or to reduce the obligation to the taxpayers in Alabama after 3 years in order for this not to be just a 3-year and done type of thing? I mean, that's the big concern here. If you're someone that supports Amtrak and supports the service, is that after 3 years, somebody has to step in and provide the bill, because the city of Mobile is not. And that would be the state of Alabama, which up to this point has not really, jumped up and down with a lot of excessive excitement over the project. But that's not to say that, support might not come later if the ridership's up and the project's breaking even based on the fares that are eventually forthcoming. So, yeah, and we still need to know what that fare price is.
Yeah, and I think it matters because, I mean, with some exception, but for somebody like me who's going to ride it once a year, maybe, I know I'll ride it once, but it's not like I'm going to be riding that thing all the time. Most times I would drive over there, but just being on a train, kind of for the lark, take the kids, I would do that. But if you're going to try to get people doing it routinely, weekly, you better have a fare that is competitive to what it's going to cost to fill up the car, drive over, get parking, those kind of things. I mean, it has to be for the week in and week out user. It has to make some sense.
Yeah, that's correct. You make a good point. I think it's the key thing too. I know there's a big marketing plan going on. Various, like Visit Mobile is teaming up with the convention visitors folks in Mississippi, and they're trying to find ways, to market it, coordinating it with special events and holidays and when tourist groups are in town, and how to get them on the train. And, that's going to be a key as well to try and drive up ridership, not just you and me who might decide to go there once a year for the Saints game or something like that, or once a year to Mardi Gras. But I think there's going to have to be that focus of keeping this thing continuously active throughout the year. As far as a commuter rail for job wise, that I don't know how that's going to work out. I don't know if that's what this is intended to be, but there could be some potential there. I just don't know how that looks right now. I don't even know what the hours are yet. I know that that's been thrown out there. Yeah,
and I mean, I think it's a neat idea, but how it's going to pay for itself, I still don't know. But maybe they're going to come out and wow me with something, and people be like, okay, I didn't know about the whatever, but I just right now what I've seen and the information's been reported here, I don't know how this thing, and it doesn't have to make money. It just don't cost money.
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's, you know, how, you know, what will be the obligation after 3 years is the key. Yeah, and what will Mississippi and Louisiana, how will they look upon it? I don't think there's been any issues in Louisiana. I think there may have been some issues in Mississippi, but those got worked out. They're using some federal funds to help support it going, you know, initially. And I do know one of their biggest champions of this project is Mississippi Republican Senator Roger Wicker. He's been, I mean, he's backed this thing since day one. He's still, you know, in the Senate and still in the Senate. I say that because this project's been going on for a long time.
No joke.
And we've had a lot of turnover in the Senate in that period of time as well. So, and in the House. So yeah, that's, I think it first got discussed when Joe Bonner was in Congress and Bradley Byrne,
that's
Jerry Carl, now Barry Moore. So yes, it's been going on for a while. So yeah, I mean, you know, a big champion of this has been Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker, and the folks in Mississippi are excited. You know, interestingly, Pascagoula's got their train stop is something that's kind of a little bit underrated. They got a craft brewery right when you get off the train stop in Pascagoula. So this could be one of those things where folks in Mobile may be like, maybe we'll take the train. And I'm sure there'll be a discounted fare just if you wanted to make a stop in Pascagoula and come back. But, you know, that could be an option, too.
What you boys going to do? We're fixing to go to Pascagoula, get a beer, and come back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I who's to say? I mean, Biloxi, though, is the likely option. I've heard of commuting buses to Ocean Springs. You know, there's a lot of logistical pieces that need to be put together, though. But it'll be interesting to see how they make some of this stuff work. I mean, you know, there are festivals that go on in Ocean Springs, as there are
Ocean Springs,
County.
A beautiful, beautiful town. Just
yes, it is.
It really is a pretty place. Of course, we're going to maybe still talk about this 10 years from now. But if people want to read this story and everything else you're working on, how they find you online?
At John Sharp 99 on the X, John, you know, I'm easily found on AL.com, Blue Sky, Threads, all that.
Okay. No Snapchat?
No.
Okay, just checking.
No Snapchat.
All right. There he is. A friend, fantastic reporter, and up-and-coming pickleball pro, John Sharp. Thank you, man.
All right, Sean. Thanks.
Be good. All right. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:56 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I gotta get a look at this. Devin Walsh had the news update from WKRG. Somebody stole the local business's wrapped trailer. I've always wondered about that. When you hear those stories, like somebody steals something obvious, you know, if you steal a logoed vehicle, maybe it's harder to blend in and get away with it. Like if somebody stole the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, might be a problem to get away with that. Then you take it, even if you took it to the chop shop, the guys are like, man, what am I supposed to do with this? All right, let's grab a few texts here before we go to the news. Come back, lots to talk about with you in hour number two. Let's see, Mallory Piping text line, first up here. What is it? Oh, Derek says people in Pascagoula will be getting on with chickens and goats. To transport them? I don't know. In Pascagoula, I don't think that'll happen. I did see that when I was a kid. I was probably late teens. And I'm in a first world country. I was in Italy. And we were riding the train because, you know, we were doing the thing like where you had $5 a day to survive backpacking around. And people were absolutely, I didn't see any hoofed animals, but did see chickens brought onto the train there. As we cruise along. Michael said FM Talk 106.5 should schedule a group Amtrak ride so everyone can get their one ride over with. Jeff Poore should be the tour guide, though, and tell everybody about the wonders of Amtrak. He's not their biggest cheerleader. I've been frank about this since we started talking. I think trains are cool. I'm riding a train. It's a neat thing. I still have a kind of a daydream of taking a train from home here and going up to Glacier National Park, you know, up in northern Montana and then back and doing all, you see it, all the stuff. But I just don't see how the numbers work, that this is not a, this is not just a money drain. It's gonna, it doesn't have to make money. Show me how you're not going to lose a train load of money doing this. I'm just, I worry about this. It doesn't seem to be, and once again, it's, I don't, like, unlike Jeff, who had to deal with Amtrak and in the D.C. area and commuting and all that, I didn't have to do that. For me, it's a whimsy thing. But whimsy can't cost millions of dollars a year. We've not figured that out. I mean, if I'm at Doge, whoever's left there, looking at things that cost the taxpayers money, I have to say no to a train. All right, be back right after the news.